All right, hey everybody, and welcome to Gentle Healing Year 3. I want to show off how smart I am. It only took me, how long have I lived here? Since August? It only took me from August to figure out that I could put a TV tray next to my chair and I didn't have to hold the computer on my lap the whole time I teach. Yay! It's almost like having a desk. So now I've got this all figured out. Let's see. So one thing that I wanted to mention to you, I'm going to begin with a couple of commercials. One commercial Don just said, but I'll repeat it quickly for the recording. And that's that we do have a new Gentle Healing group starting this coming Monday, January 27th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. It will be led by Reverend Shauna Summers. So again, if you know anybody who might be interested in Gentle Healing, now is the time to get them involved because, again, we only start new Gentle Healing groups once a year. And as you guys know, there's no registration process or anything like that. They just need to show up on Monday night. And the books that they'll need for Gentle Healing Year 1 are A Course in Miracles and the Holy Spirit's Interpretation of the New Testament, NTI. Also, if there's anybody listening who feels like they haven't committed themselves to Gentle Healing and they've been kind of on again, off again, I know some people have been, you feel like, you know what, I just want to start over and really commit myself this time, Monday night, this is your opportunity to start over. And I think that you'll appreciate it if you haven't been fully committed and you do it in a committed way. I think you'll notice a big difference. Some of you are going to be graduating Gentle Healing in, you know, I don't know exactly when. I haven't counted ahead. May-ish, June-ish, probably at the latest. You're going to be finishing Gentle Healing as Gentle Healing Year 3 winds down. There's not a Gentle Healing Year 4. I had that question email this morning, and the answer is no. And I'll tell you why. I mean, maybe in 5 years I'll do a Gentle Healing Year 4, but I'll tell you why there's not one. Because when I started Gentle Healing, my commitment was to lead you through the curriculums that I went through. And I haven't gone through anything after seven steps. In fact, I haven't finished seven steps. Although I will tell you, I started step seven today. Today, I started step seven. And I want to thank you guys for that because, you know, I kind of had to stay ahead of you. At least I feel like I had to. So that really kept me going at a real steady pace. But I finished step seven. But, you know, the books that I really went through, the primary books were A Course in Miracles, NTI, The Teachings of Inner Ramana, and The Seven Steps. There isn't a next book, so there isn't a next year. What I'm finding myself ready for, and that is to go deep into that awareness, watching awareness, meditation. And I don't think there'll be a class about that, right? Either people want to do it or they don't. So this really is the end of Gentle Healing. And one of the things we will talk about is what some possible next steps might be. But one of those next steps I want to talk about right now. Those of you who have not been through the Minister Preparation Program, that would be an excellent next step after Gentle Healing Year 3. And the reason I'm bringing that up is that's actually going to begin in February. And I know you're thinking, oh my gosh, but I haven't even finished year three yet. The first class in the Minister Preparation Program, well, first there's this little self-study class called Intro to MPP, which is just teaching you about MPP so you can decide if you want to take it or not. But then the first real class will begin in March. I think we decided March 9th, I think is when we decided True Discernment will start. And True Discernment has homework 4 days a week, and it's not real intensive. So if someone that's about to finish Gentle Healing Year 3 in like May or June would like to start MPP, again, MPP is a two-year program. It doesn't start every day. I think it would be, this is an excellent time to go ahead and get started. I think you can handle finishing up the seven steps and starting MPP with True Discernment at the same time. So there will be more information that will be coming out on the daily update once we get all the details worked out. Of course, I'll share more information here. But again, the intro self-study study class will be in late February to help make that final decision. And then True Discernment will really get started on March 9th. Just got a text from Norma while I'm talking to you guys, asking me to send her information about MPP. She's been curious about it. Some of y'all know Norma. She's on our board. She's our vice chairman. So we'll see if she gets involved. But yeah, consider that. Consider becoming an Awakening Together minister. We love having ministers. That's really kind of the vision for Awakening Together, is many ministers involved in many types of service, rather than, you know, it was never intended to be one leader at the helm, right? So with all of that said, how about you guys? Do you have anything that you want to share before I get started on my collection? Yes, Ron.
Yeah, you know, I kind of had, I wouldn't call it a major breakthrough, but, you know, sometimes it's something just staring you in the face for so long, and finally, you know, I can see it. And it was, I guess what triggered it was my contemplation of, quote, 1158, when one moves away from one's real nature, there is great sorrow. When one rests in self, there is great peace. And, you know, my primary entry into a certain level of this has been Nisargadatta, who always, you know, kind of uses the, I don't know if it's too tongue-in-cheek, you know, I think to some degree he actually kind of believed it was true that he was kidnapped by the IM, that, you know, really had nothing to do with him. And I think there's definitely merit to that. But what I sensed in deeper contemplation of this is that, you know, that innocent awareness at birth was really pure consciousness. And, you know, just through how we're biologically wired to notice, which is just part of consciousness, we then started noticing based on our, based on our environment. I think any human being in any environment is going to notice and start perceiving differences. So that's where the kind of I am gets mixed up with pure consciousness, and you've got the human condition. So to me, what was just seemed to be not something that had come forward to me very clearly had been just how awareness, which I kind of put in somewhere between the first and second principle of God, somewhere in there, and pure consciousness, and consciousness definitely the second level of God, but consciousness at rest is really awareness, was parallel, was joined at the hip, you know, at the very, 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 very beginning. And, you know, awareness never went anywhere. It just stayed there. It was just this human developmental thing that came along that really mixed in with the pure consciousness labeled many different things by the, you know, by the sages, but where, you know, where we, you know, where we are today. For some reason that was, I don't know, it was slightly eye-opening at the time, but just also something about a very kind of comforting to, I'm not sure I can explain why, you know, for sure. But anyway, it was just something that really kind of touched me pretty deeply this last week. Give me a moment. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for Ron, for sharing that. I appreciate that. Is there anyone else who would like to share? All right, then why don't we go ahead and jump in, and let me see what I have here. 1143 to get us started. I do have 1158 on here also, Ron, if we get that far. that one stood out to me this week as well. But 1143, in the self, which is infinite consciousness, there is no movement at all. In the self, which is infinite consciousness, there is no movement at all. So this is what I have in the journal. There is a non-moving ongoingness, always here-ness, spaciousness, which is aware of space, presentness, in which time moves. What is that? Can I honestly say it isn't me? The body moves, thoughts move incessantly, but do I ever move, or does everything move in me? Hold on, we're going to play an awareness game. Let me get my prop. So what we're going to do is we're going to focus on the fact that that we never move. And we're going to play an awareness game. This is one of the awareness games that was in that book that we used at the fall retreat. This is an awareness game where you notice that even time moves in you. For the most part, you know, people believe that we move in time. But time moves in you. You're still and time moves in you. So what I'm going to do, and if somebody's listened to the audio, you'll need like a clock with a minute hand to play this game by yourself. But for those of you who are here, I'm going to hold up my, let's see, where's the, oh my goodness, there's all backwards. I'm going to hold up my alarm clock. And you guys can see the second hand moving there, right? What I'd like you to do is pay attention to that second hand while it's moving. Notice that time is moving. You can see it moving. And notice your still presence. Notice that time is moving in your still presence. Notice that your awareness, your presence is completely unchanging, completely unmoving. As time moves on. Does anybody have anything they want to share based on that brief awareness game? Yes, Tony.
I noticed when you first put the face of the clock up to the screen that my instinct was to follow the second hand as it was going around and round. And I noticed that that was the focus of my attention, is just watching the movement of the second hand. But then my awareness kind of just stabilized into the center of the face where the little circle part of your watch. And I saw, even though I was still watching the movement, it wasn't, my attention wasn't focused there anymore. It was just kind of still and quiet in here, but still somehow just knowing that that was still happening. So that's what I noticed.
Thank you. Anyone else want to share? Yes, George.
Well, I had the thought, you know, theoretically we could move back in time just as well as forward. And Einstein said that was possible mathematically.
Wow, that's pretty cool that it's possible mathematically. They say if it's possible mathematically, then it's possible, right? Somebody just has to figure it out, the details. You know, one of the things that seems to happen to these bodies is they age. In fact, I'm leading a retreat here this week, and I was giving an example, and the example had to do with a standing long jump. And so, you know, sometimes I'm pretty animated when I'm teaching. So I stood up, and I got ready to do that standing long jump as a part of my teaching example. And I heard this strong intuitive no. And I remembered, oh, yeah, I'm old. If I do this, I might hurt myself. You know, I could hurt the knees, I could hurt the back, you know. But why did I forget that the body's old? You know, because awareness hasn't changed. That body has aged in awareness, just like that time was moving in awareness, right? So yeah, it's interesting. It's fun to play these games that go along with this. Let's see, in the self, which is infinite consciousness, there is no movement at all. And to notice that that's absolutely true, that all movement is happening within awareness, but awareness has no movement at all. Any other comments before I move on to the next one? All right, then let me see what I have next here. 1145. When the veils that hide the truth are removed, the truth shines by itself. When the veils that hide the truth are removed, the truth shines by itself. All right. The veils that hide truth are misidentification and misdirected attention. I can't think of any other veils now. I used to think there were many. The belief in this or that, the grievance or judgment here or there, the desire for something not present, the thoughts and the perceptions. But now I see it more simply. The veils that hide truth are misidentification and misdirected attention. Two misapplications. Interesting. One definition of application is the act of putting something into operation. Another is sustained effort or hard work. So the veils that hide truth are put into operation through sustained effort and hard work. Sustained effort to identify wrongly and working hard to direct attention away from truth. Ha ha. That makes the answer easy. Rest, relax, stop all effort, and let the truth simply be as you are. So again, in this particular contemplation, I really saw that there's, as it says, that there's only two veils. One is misidentifying. We could call it misidentifying with mind, misidentifying with body, misidentifying with personality. But that's one of the veils to truth whenever we misidentify. And the other one is misdirected attention, which is attention directed outward, at thought and at perceptions, rather than attention directed inward at truth. And as I continued to contemplate this, as you can tell, what I saw is we actually work very hard to misidentify. We aren't just being whenever we misidentify. For example, if I saw myself as a smart person, and you say something to me that points out that maybe I'm not so smart, I'm going to quickly go to work within myself, within my own mind, to re-justify my identification as smart. I could do it in a large number of ways. I could, you know, decide that you're the one that's so stupid. You wouldn't know smart if you saw it. You know, I could justify why I made some mistake, or it was somebody else's fault or whatever, and it wasn't me. And, you know, there's all kinds of work. It's work. There's all kinds of work I can do to maintain that misidentification, but it takes work. So what if I identify with something, like, for example, if I identify with being smart, and you point out to me that maybe I'm not as smart as I think I am. What if I do nothing with that? What if I just be? Kind of reminds me of the Course in Miracles lesson, in my defenselessness, my safety lies. Right? What if I stop all work to misidentify? Stop all work to hold up my self-images maintain my self-images would be another way of saying it. And I just let you see me in any way you want to see me. And just do not do anything to hold up any self-image at all. I also noticed that the misdirected attention, outward attention is a lot of work. You know, if you meditate, you've probably noticed that when you meditate, what you really gradually start to do is relax. I mean, you might, if you're like me, I don't know if you are, but if you're like me, you might even be sitting there 20, 25 minutes, maybe even some days 40 minutes, and all of a sudden you feel the whole body just relax. Like it took that long for you to quit holding on to tension you didn't even know you were holding on to, right? And the longer you sit there and the longer you allow the tension to kind of pull back and rest back rather than being out, the more the body just kind of relaxes, which proves that holding the attention out is a lot of work. We're working hard to keep that misdirected attention in place. So what if we all become divinely lazy? Stop doing all that hard work to misidentify or misdirect our attention and just relax, which another way of saying that is just be. Just be with whatever it is. Just let everything be. And maybe these veils that we work so hard to hold up will just start to kind of fall away and a truth realization will dawn. Does anyone want to share anything? All right, then, all is quiet. So we'll go on to my next collection, which was 1146. 1146 says, in the spiritually awakened and enlightened state, the sage rests in the self. See, he's divinely lazy. See, right? That's what it says. The sage rests in the self. In the spiritually awakened and enlightened state, the sage rests in the self. That means the answer is the answer. The self is not the foreground of experience. It is the background of awareness, which is aware of the foreground of experience. Rest in that background. Let the foreground be as it is. To try to change the foreground is to identify with the foreground. Stay in the audience and continually notice. I am the audience of everything. Everything, regardless of what it is. It seems like the last several months, this audience theme has been hit very, very hard in my journal. And it's about always, always, always staying the watcher, no matter what is occurring. And what's interesting about this particular journal entry is it really talked about resting as the watcher. The watcher, being the watcher, isn't a new kind of work. The work is the outward attention. What we want to do is learn to rest as the watcher, to just kind of be the observer of everything. I remember Ken Wapnick used to talk about sitting in the balcony of the theater with Jesus eating popcorn as you watch everything happening. But when we're being the watcher, when we're staying in the audience, we're not only watching the perceptions, but we're watching the thoughts, we're watching the emotions, we're watching the reactions. You know, we have to see this as out on the screen too. It's not just what's out there that's on the screen. It's this too. And one of the things that happens is that people tend to take this, and again, for the audio, I'm pointing at my own body. In your case, it would be your body. One of the mistakes that people make is taking this, what they perceive to be their own self, too seriously. In fact, one of the things I remember Peace Pilgrim said was, it was easy for her to let go of judging others. But when she learned to let go of judging herself, she says, then I really started to get somewhere. So learning to even be the witness of this, whatever this says, whatever this does, whatever this feels, staying back in the audience with everything. I also remember once upon a time, and this was several years ago, when this teaching was showing up somewhere. I don't know where it was. It could have came through my own hand, or you know, could have been listening to another teacher. But this teaching came up about just watching this, and I remember I got a contraction. And the reason I got the contraction is I really believed this. This was before I let go of the I am bad belief. So I really believed that this was inherently bad, wrong, not good enough, and that this had to be improved. You know, if I was ever going to reach enlightenment, if I was ever going to wake up, this had to be improved. And I believed that firmly. So when I heard the teaching, just to be the watcher of this, a contraction. Because just to watch it means not to improve it, and it has to improve. But the quote says, in the spiritually awakened and enlightened state, the sage rests in the self. That's, you know, that's just, to me, what that says is all the time. Stays in the audience all the time. You know, if a sage happens to hear his voice get loud and kind of scolding-like for a moment, he's in the audience observing that. Observing the body getting kind of loud and kind of scolding for a moment. Now, since then, I have shifted into being able to do that. I no longer judge anything that this body does. I'm able to stay in the audience with it. But it wasn't something I could do right away because I had such a firm belief that I had to meet some standard of behavior. It took a really long time to let that go. So just stay in the audience. That's the job. Yes, Ron.
Isn't there, though, here kind of in the beginning stages, which I consider myself still to kind of be there, isn't effort necessary? I mean, it's, you know, that we're kind of this trinity of the, you know, of the watcher and the actor, and what's being acted upon all at the same time. And I think it depends on where we're at in our staging as far as where we spend most of our time inhabiting. So isn't there, I just sense that really sitting and doing nothing, well, even that in itself is effort. So I guess it's whatever the type of effort it is, but so yeah, okay. So being still, well, yeah, being still doesn't mean there's nothing going on.
It's funny. I'm actually leading a goal setting retreat right now. You know, so it is kind of funny, but I think the real trick to staying in the audience is non-judgment. You see, as soon as you start judging, you've jumped up on that stage. You know, I'm intending a shift for this body this year. I'm intending to drastically increase my meditation. So you could call that a change. You know, some people looking out from the outside might even call that a self-improvement, right? And it is a direction that I want to move in. But the staying in the audience watches that too. And the staying in the audience watches, you know, if the meditation gradually increases, watches that. If the meditation doesn't gradually increase, and in fact, I meditate less in the coming year, it watches that. It watches whatever is. And watching, a good way to define watching is the absence of judgment. So there could still be the appearance of progress. There could be the appearance of falling back and doing less. Like, you know, maybe I meditate really strong for 2 or 3 years and then there's this decision that happens in the mind. This is getting me nowhere. I'm going to quit meditating, kind of like Peaceful Warrior. Dan Millman at one point just said, forget it. I'm quitting. I'm going back to my old life. If that happens, that has to be watched too. So yeah, it doesn't mean that things aren't going to happen. It just means whatever happens is going to be watched. The decision to meditate more is watched. And when you're watching, in other words, when there's no judgment, you're abiding as the self. And again, the trick is that you're, you know, again, it becomes easier, at least for most of us, maybe not all of us, it becomes easier to learn to watch the outside. The harder part is watching, you know, this that I think is me because of identification. Because of misidentification. I don't see this as the same as that guy across the street. You know, it's easier for me to watch the guy across the street in a very observing kind of way, sit here and stare out the window and, oh, look what he's doing now, you know, in a non-judging way. And it's harder to do that with this body because I identify with it. So by learning to just watch this body too and whatever it's doing now, oh, look what it's doing now. It's you know, learning to meditate longer. You're actually also letting go of identification. Any other comments? Let's go to 1149. And I don't have a journal entry to share on this one. I just wanted us to kind of look at it together. It says, I am the pure space-like consciousness, devoid of objective experience, and beyond all mental activity or thought. I am the pure and infinite consciousness, even so are you. Again, the watching is coming to mind, probably because I just talked about this, but the watching is coming to mind. If I am beyond all mental activity, then the mental activity that I perceive as in my head is actually on the screen. And if you see it as on the screen, it's not you. You're devoid of all mental activity, right? You're the spaciousness that time moves in. You're the spaciousness that this body ages in. And you're the spaciousness that the mental activity is occurring in. Just like you can watch this second hand go around and notice that you're the still emptiness it's happening in, you can watch the thoughts come and go and notice that you're the still spaciousness that the thoughts are arising and falling away in. And you can even watch a thought move the body. You know, like a while ago, there was the thought, oh, we're going to play an awareness game. Let me go get my prop. And the body got up out of the chair, went over, got the clock, came back. But you can watch every bit of that. You can watch the thought arise to do an awareness game. You can watch the body go get the clock. You can watch, you know, watch any thoughts that might arise while you're playing the awareness game. And again, a good way to think of watching is not judging. Just watching everything that arises, whether it seems to be on the outside or seems to be on the inside where the thoughts are. I am the pure space-like consciousness. It's all happening in me. Devoid of objective experience. You know, I'm not the body is an object having experience, but I'm not the body. The body is an object having experience in the spaciousness that I am. You know, we've played that game many, many times where I've had you guys pinch the finger and notice that you see the pain. You yourself aren't experiencing pain, right? You see the pain. You know, I mean, go ahead every now and then, just when nobody's looking so nobody will think you're insane. Just hit yourself. Hit the hand. Notice the hand felt that. Yeah, or hit your head if you want. Notice. No, do it and notice. Notice that's happening in you, right? Yeah, I love to play these kinds of games. I've played these kinds of games so many times, you guys just, you know, you just can't imagine. Sit around and play with the body and notice that this sensation is happening within awareness. This entire body is within awareness. You know, I am the pure space-like consciousness devoid of objective experience and beyond all mental activity or thought. I am the pure and infinite consciousness, even so are you. Anybody want to share on that quote? Yes, Tony.
I will share what I wrote for my contemplation that day. And I think this is because when I was writing that morning that I felt like I wasn't because this statement says that I am the pure space-like consciousness, and starting out with that, that was what they knew themselves to be. And so I wasn't there. I'm not there. There is a part of the current awareness that recognizes this statement as, yes, I know this to be true. It is this feeling that what I am is so much more expansive than the human experience. But the human experience appears to be temporarily unable to move forward into the expansiveness of the infinite one consciousness. All is well. Continue to feel into the recognition of the expansiveness of consciousness without judgment. This is faith in action. Let your faith guide your willingness to remain open to the expanding consciousness. In faith, there is no opposite.
Thank you. Anyone else want to share from their journals? All right, let's see what's next then. 1154. Oops, I clicked wrong. You guys disappeared. There you are. Okay, 1154. Consciousness is eternal and unconditioned. All right, let me share my screen on this. You guys are on step 5, right? Getting lost. Conditioning is learned. What I am is unlearned. I do not have opinions. Conditioning does. If I were born in another place or time, the opinions would be different. I am always the same. I am everyone, right there, behind their conditioned opinions, behind their conditioned beliefs, behind their conditioned desires and attachments. There I am, here I am, unconditioned, undisturbed. This is very similar to what Ron was talking about earlier about the newborn baby is that pure consciousness. You know, I've contemplated this a lot too, and one thing that's assisted me in contemplating this is that my daughter is adopted from China. You know, because I can sit there and look at my daughter, and you know, I know her personality. Of course, she's my daughter, and I can see parts of my personality that she has gotten from being around me, and parts of her personality that she has gotten from being around Ron. And there are even significant parts of her personality that she's gotten from Danielle, because Danielle lived with us for about 5 or 6 years, which to a child is a long time. You know, Danielle's kind of like her sister in that way. But if that Chinese girl hadn't been adopted by me, if she'd been raised by whoever those original Chinese parents were, she wouldn't be the same person. So the person can't be who she is, right? That's just conditioning. That's just a program. You know, Ron talked about how, you know, we're born as this pure consciousness and then we begin to notice. Well, of course, Ron was here for the Freedom from the Ego retreat. Well, what we've talked about in that retreat is that the noticing actually starts programming the brain. Children are made this way. However, you know, we're made to notice, and that's how we learn. We notice language and we learn language. We notice walking and we learn walking. We notice using chopsticks or forks or whatever, and that's what we do. And we notice everything. And in fact, what we learned during the Freedom from the Ego retreat, they said the first 7 years, that's primarily what's happening in a life, is that it's noticing and the brain is being programmed. And then we appear to be these little people. It's just a program. I mean, think about it. If you were born in another place, another time, had different parents, do you realize if you were born in Iraq, you'd probably be Muslim? Just because you were born in Iraq. And that's how you were raised. You know, everything that we identify with that we think is me is a program. It's just a program. What we are is that which existed prior to the program. And as Ram pointed out, when we were born, and we all know this is true, even though you can't remember being born, every single person knows this is true if you've ever, ever seen an infant. All babies are just alike, little bitty babies. There is no difference, maybe in their skin color, their eye color, their hairs, but in the baby itself, all babies are just alike. They're born exactly alike. There are no differences. The differences come later as the program develops. So that just a likeness is still here in every one of us. Right? That's all we're trying to get back to, is that which we are before the program or without the program. The problem is we're identifying with the program. And if you think about that at all, you'll realize that's rather foolish to identify with a program. It doesn't even make sense. Any comments or sharings? Yes, Tony.
What you talked about, the programming is just within our vicinity, but there is even a larger program, I think, just within human consciousness. I mean, the whole world, we basically, some things we think the same way. But it seems to be rather deep, lots of layers to undo. It's probably easy to do some of the ones that you can see, you know, oh, I want to change this, or I want to realize that I don't have to think that way. What would I be without that belief? But when you start getting into the larger picture, that I think that kind of programming is so much deeper and hidden. And that's something that I want to continue to become aware of and strip away from. So, thanks.
I also had the advantage of living in different parts of the world. And when I lived in Japan, I remember talking to one of my Japanese friends about, we call it cheating here, you know, like when a man cheats on his wife or a wife cheats on her husband. Listen to that language. Cheating is what we call it. But I was talking to her about this, and you know, she said that the Japanese people don't think anything of that. They said that's just what people do. It's just what people do. And in fact, in at least in Okinawa, Japan, where I live, they had these car motels, and they were everywhere. Car motels, where you pull into a garage, and the car door closes behind. The garage door closes behind you. Go into the motel room from the garage, and when you get ready to pay, you ring a bell or something. They come, and there's a little back door that opens up, and you pay through the door. Nobody ever sees you, and you leave, and nobody ever sees you. And I guarantee you, nobody. You only spend a couple hours in these hotels. they're not for sleeping in, I assure you. Well, I'll confess, I've been in some. And they're actually very cool. There was this one I used to go to with I had a Japanese boyfriend. And every single room in the entire hotel was decorated differently. every single one of them. So they were like a different experience. So they're pretty cool. But, you know, the culture wouldn't have all these car motels if infidelity wasn't accepted as natural. Right? And there was still some secrecy there. You didn't see who you were with. But there were all these car motels. So, you know, if you're raised in that culture that kind of accepts infidelity as natural, you don't divorce your husband when he cheats on, you don't even have that word, cheats. You know, it's just something you accept. This isn't even what the marriage is about. The marriage isn't about being faithful to one another. The marriage is about other things. You know, even that is programming. Think about it. Of course, you know, like in Arabic countries, fathers kill their own daughters for losing their virginity before they're married. That's programming. Let's see what else we got here. I think it's really interesting to contemplate that, you know, what we identify with, what even what we value is pretty much just all programming. It's not at all who we are. 1158. When one moves away from one's real nature, there is great sorrow. This is what Ron read for us. When one rests in the self, there is great peace. I'm going to read 1159 as well, and then we'll look at my journal. The self, or infinite consciousness, does not do anything and is not involved in activities. So when you move away from that which does not do anything, you experience great sorrow. If you rest in that which does not do anything, then there is great peace. All right, so let's look at the journal. Okay, 1158. When one moves away from one's real nature, there is great sorrow. When one rests in the self, there is great peace. This is a useful test. If I am suffering to even the slightest degree, I have moved away from the self. So just return to the self, to the audience, which we could call the non-judgment. If this is actually done, peace will return, although nothing in the play may change at all. So let's imagine that you found out that your spouse or your boyfriend had an affair and you get all upset. And then you say, wait a minute, if I'm upset, this is because I've moved away from the self. This is because I am no longer abiding as that which does nothing. I'm caught up in my programming. I'm just going to move back to the audience, move back to the non-judgment, and watch and see what happens next. And who knows, maybe that watching to see what happens next is even you leaving that person. But there could be peace, right? There could be peace instead of unhappiness as this play unfolds in the way that it's unfolding. When one moves away from one's real nature, there is great sorrow. That's the cause of suffering, moving away from your real nature, believing your programming instead of abiding as the non-judgmental self. Let's look at 1159. Well, it looks like there's maybe a couple posts here. The self, or infinite consciousness, does not do anything and is not involved in activities. This is also a useful test, although it feels like a more challenging one. Challenge is welcome. We advance through challenge. So what is the test? If I have a sense of doership, I have moved away from the self. If I have a sense of watching but doing nothing, I abide in the self. One is either on stage acting or one is in the audience watching. One cannot be in both places. Now, this is an interesting thing, but I can tell you that I guess even since October, I've had some additional mastery in this, because I significantly feel a lot of the time, not 100% of the time, that I'm just watching what this body is doing. I don't feel a sense of doership. In fact, let's look at 1159B, see if it sheds more light on this. It might. Yeah, it does. How does doing occur without a sense of doership? This is not difficult. In fact, notice my hand just went up like that while I was talking. This is not difficult. See, that just happened. I didn't like, oh, let me lift my hand up while I speak here, right? It just happened. How does doing occur without a sense of doership? This is not difficult. Doing just happens. I experience that easily while teaching and frequently while writing and also while speaking when not teaching. Doing simply happens. The sense of doership doesn't come from doing. It comes from thinking about doing. Watching to see what will be written next is not doing. Thinking, what should I write next, is doing. Stay in the audience and watch what happens on stage. Don't engage in it with thought. That is resting in the self. But since this sense of non-doing needs to be mastered, put focus on noticing watching. This can be fun. Or this can be done. This can be fun. This will be amazing. So again, the watching is the non-judgment. And you know what happens? I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, you know, it's really exaggerated in teenagers. I think as we've aged, we've gotten a little better at this. But I remember in high school, after sitting down and eating my food, and I had to go put my tray up, you know, wherever you put your tray up so they can do the dishes. I remember thinking about people watching me walk across the room. Anybody else ever have that kind of, okay, good, it wasn't just me. You know, so the thinking about the walking across the room, that's the doing, not the just the walking across the room. You know, if you can just pick your tray up and walk across the room without thinking about it, there isn't that strong sense of doership. That self-consciousness that we felt, that, you know, that identification with the body walking across the room came from the thinking about walking across the room. And if you pay close attention, although you may be perfectly able to walk across a room now without thinking about it like you did as a kid, you'll notice that anything that you have a strong sense of doership about, you thought about it a lot. You know, you thought about it a lot. You know, maybe you made a mistake and you spent a lot of time thinking about that mistake you made and how, you know, you shouldn't have done that and that was stupid and you just weren't paying attention and blah, 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 blah. If you just watch the mistake happen and watch whatever correct, I mean, it doesn't mean the correction won't take place. If there is one, watch the correction. You're not going to have that same sense of doership. The doership comes from the thinking. So it's about, again, it's about learning to watch even what this body does. And again, watching is non-judgment. And that's it for me today, everybody. So maybe I'll see some of you again tomorrow night, some of you next week. George, I plan to listen to your weekly gathering. I missed it because Jasmine was going back to school and we had our family breakfast, chocolate chip pancakes and all that. But I could tell when I came on that it was an awesome gathering by the comments. So I'm going to wait for it to get up on YouTube because I want to watch it, not just hear it. And then I'm going to watch it. I'm really looking forward to it. I know you did a great job already, and I look forward to seeing it. All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a good evening.